You may be seated. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. We're on the record for the case of Coppola versus Wells Fargo Bank, case number 81007. And we just want to take this opportunity before we even start to apologize to the respondents and counsel, client. We're very, very sorry. There was a snafu with the notices. And I can only imagine when you walked through the door in Carson City as the attorney and there's no arguments and you were probably pretty nervous and worried. But what the court wants to do is make sure that you are reimbursed and we're going to pay for that airfare and whatever expenses it has cost because it's our mistake. And so, again, on behalf of Justice Pickering and Justice Kadish and I, we are really sorry about this mix-up. But I can assure you, I mean, the good news is, with COVID, this is almost normal now because, as you probably know, with en banc arguments for a couple of years there, we had the Carson City justices, the Las Vegas justices, the councils were spread out throughout the state as well. And so I guess that's kind of the good news, that it's not like before COVID where it would have been really weird. This is almost normal now. And so with that, again, our apologies.
Thank you, Your Honors. And I'm just glad the court could make this last minute accommodation. And I'll just do my best to communicate as best as possible, but it's really all right. And I appreciate the acknowledgement. Thank you.
No, I'm having trouble hearing.
Yeah.
Hold on.
She'll be on a mic when she's out here.
I think I was far from the mic. Are you able to hear me now?
There you go.
Okay. I just wanted to say thank you, and I appreciate the courts making this work at the last minute, and I appreciate the acknowledgement, but I'm sure this will be fine. Thanks again.
So sorry. Yeah, we saw that both counsel were from Las Vegas, so no good deed goes unpunished. And we thought, well, you know, we'll just have it in Las Vegas since the council will make it easy, and that this is what happens. So, all right. So with that, we will start then with the appellant. And if you want to introduce yourself, since do you want any rebuttal time?
Yes, Your Honor. I would like to reserve 2 minutes.
2 minutes for rebuttal. Okay. Thank you. Please.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. May it please the court, Taylor Altman on behalf of the appellant. Your Honors, this is a simple case. This is a case of egregious bad faith on the part of Wells Fargo and a foreclosure mediation. As a result, Wells Fargo should not be rewarded with a foreclosure certificate and should not be allowed to foreclose on my client's home. The facts here are clear. Wells Fargo obtained and relied on a second appraisal of the property to deny Mr. Coppola for a loan modification 1 day prior to mediation, but failed to disclose that appraisal in accordance with the foreclosure mediation rules. At mediation, Wells Fargo also orally provided a short sale value of $620,000. This was significantly more than the last appraisal, which was $540,000. The property would likely not sustain a sale for $620,000, meaning that Wells Fargo was basically setting up the homeowner to fail because he'd face almost certain foreclosure, which is exactly what the foreclosure mediation program was designed to avoid. The mediator,
let me pause you. I just want to, there was some back and forth in the record on 620 versus 650 as the short sale offer. You're confirming it was 620?
Yes, Your Honor. So in the district court notes that it was 620. However, my client and some mediation observers who provided declarations heard the figure of 650, which is actually why we're asking the court to clarify Rule 13 to require written disclosure,
right,
of the short sale value.
Your contention is you would agree that the court found correctly on the evidence that it was 620.
Yes, Your Honor.
Thank you.
So the mediator also notes in her statement that two documents required by the foreclosure mediation rules were missing. The appraisal or BPO document dated not more than 60 days before the mediation hearing, as well as a short sale document. And finally, as additional evidence about
your client waived the requirement that it be within the 60 days when the mediation was continued at his request or his instance. It may have been medical issues beyond his control, but
Yes, Your Honor. So the mediation was originally scheduled for November of 2018. They delayed it for 3 months due to my client's health issues. And they did waive the requirement that a second appraisal would be required. So the first could be used within waiving the 60-day rule. However, the fact that Wells Fargo took it upon itself to get the second interior and exterior appraisal and then used it, which the mediator talks about in her statement, they relied on it to deny him for a loan modification and then did not disclose the second appraisal in accordance with Rule 13 sub 10.
Now, maybe you can clarify this. I saw that there was some notice of a denial the day before, but it was my understanding that your client had been denied and this was some sort of an appeal process that then reaffirmed that denial. Is that your understanding?
That's my understanding, Your Honor. Yes. So on November 28, 2018, Wells Fargo had denied him for a loan modification and then subsequently he appealed. And the denial of the appeal came on March 6th, which was one day before mediation. And the proximity of the dates, the fact that the appraisal had been gotten on March 3rd, and then there was a denial of the appeal of the loan modification on March 6th, the mediation happened on March 7th, and the mediator says in her statement that Wells Fargo relied on the second appraisal in denying him for this appeal of the earlier denial of the loan modification, strongly suggests that Wells Fargo obtained the second appraisal and relied on it at mediation to deny him for a loan modification and didn't disclose it in accordance with the rules.
I have a question, and I'll ask both sides. It's just odd to me that the homeowner filed the petition for judicial review. Below, the mediator never issued the foreclosure certificate. And then it's the homeowner that does the appeal or the petition. In like an opposition or response, the district court then issues the certificate. Wouldn't Wells Fargo have to have actually filed a petition for judicial review based on the mediator's denial of the foreclosure certificate to get the relief that they got from this district court? It's almost like sua sponte from an opposition.
So, Your Honor, that's a great question. So what happened is at mediation, mediator prepares a statement, and she recommended that the petition for foreclosure mediation be dismissed, meaning that the foreclosure could continue. And this is what was really troubling to the homeowner, my client. Mm-hmm. So he filed the petition for judicial review. And then in accordance with FMR 20, the respondents filed a request for appropriate relief. And then these competing documents were...
So what's that rule? I'm sorry, I didn't... Really, under that rule, what is that rule number under the foreclosure mediation? They filed a response, you said?
Yes, Your Honor. Foreclosure mediation rule 20, I believe it's sub 3.
So despite the petition for review by the homeowner, they can file that relief?
Yes, Your Honor. It's my understanding that under rule 20, either side, if they're unhappy with what the mediator comes up with, can file a request for appropriate relief. And my client filed a petition for judicial review, which was essentially the same thing as a request for relief from the district court.
Right.
So as additional evidence of bad faith, Wells Fargo wasn't prepared to have a productive discussion at mediation to talk about the homeowner's options. The mediation was only about 20 minutes long. The local appearance council brought nothing but a business card and an undated letter from Wells Fargo saying that Tiffany and Bosco, the firm, was able to represent them in unspecified mediations. Council wasn't prepared with any of the documents required under Rule 13 sub 7. So, for example, the note, the assignments, the deed of trust. Under NRS 107.086, subparagraph 5, there are four distinct violations that a party can make at foreclosure mediation. And two of them are at issue here, failure to participate in good faith, as well as failure to bring to mediation each document required. So if any one of these violations occurs, the mediator must recommend sanctions. And it's the district court's, within the district court's purview to decide whether sanctions are appropriate. Here, we contend that the district court erred in not finding any violations based on the mediator's statement and then not sanctioning Wells Fargo. So we would ask, Your Honors.
The mediator did not find that they had failed to bring the note, deed of trust, and assignments, correct?
That's correct, Your Honor. She didn't note that. She noted that only two documents were missing, the appraisal or BPO and the short sale document. Mm-hmm. However, there's competing declarations from observers and from my client stating that the only things brought to the mediation were a business card and this undated letter from Wells Fargo about authorization of counsel.
Let me clarify this. Sure. The second appraisal, and I understand it wasn't disclosed 10 days before the mediation. Was it disclosed at some point?
Yes, Your Honor, but unfortunately it wasn't disclosed until after the mediation, meaning that the parties couldn't have a productive discussion or negotiations regarding the second appraisal because my client never even saw it. The mediator never saw it, which she notes in her statement.
Okay, so it's not just that it wasn't disclosed 10 days before, it wasn't even disclosed the day of the mediation.
Exactly, Your Honor. So we argue that not only was it not substantial compliance with the rule, it was non-compliance on Wells Fargo's part.
Your client stipulated in gaining the continuance, and I'm not impugning the good faith of it. I understand there was a medical reason, but they stipulated, and they stipulated they would use the first or the existing, they wouldn't need to get a new BPO or appraisal. And so the district court in its written order finds that that stipulation was binding and rendered the whole issue with respect to the second appraisal a non-starter. And so we look at that and we have to put on our standard of review glasses. Written stipulation is construed. It's a question of law. How do you construe it? Your argument is that the second appraisal wormed its way into the proceeding and somehow poisoned them. Is that the argument around the stipulation?
Yes, Your Honor. They did stipulate that because of the continuance that they would not require a second appraisal. But then Wells Fargo did obtain a second appraisal, which the mediator notes in her statement.
At your client's request?
Yes, Your Honor. Yes, he did request it. However, Wells Fargo made him believe that it was necessary. Ivan Mora, a representative of the trustee, had emailed him previously and said that his appeal was being held up by evaluation. And so Mr. Coppola was very motivated to get the second valuation so that his appeal of the denial of the loan modification could be evaluated. He made himself available despite being in the hospital. He was available in mid-February, but the respondents delayed on getting that appraisal until just a few days before the mediation.
And the second appraisal, it could not have been disclosed 10 days before because it didn't exist 10 days before. Is that right?
That's correct, Your Honor.
And so if we credit the Ninth Circuit case Shaw's position about short sales, which is it isn't, they don't have to go below the equity in the home. A short sale is measured by the equity in the home as opposed to what is measured in by the debt due. Actually, the reverse. So if we credited Shaw, the fact that your client still owed X amount of money and the short sale amount was less than that amount, why is that a problem that the second appraisal was out there?
Well, Your Honor, that's
a
great question.
That's a bad question.
No, I totally understood, Your Honor. So in Shaw, yes, that is the legal definition of a short sale, and Wells Fargo contends that the balance due on the loan is about $720, or was at the time. But the short sale they gave was $620, which is less, so it does meet the Shaw definition. However, it was given, we have to look at whether it was given in good faith or bad faith, and we argue that it was given in bad faith because the most recent appraisal from a few days before mediation was $540,000, suggesting that $600,000.
But they're not required to go down to that level by law, so why is it bad faith?
You're right, Your Honor, they're not required to. Rule 13 doesn't require it, nor does the case law. However, when considering, you know, the totality of the circumstances with the mediation, we want to make sure in the spirit of the foreclosure mediation program that the parties have equal access to information. They're all negotiating with the same facts. And so it's important that the appraisal value has some bearing on the short sale value given. They can't just throw out a short sale value that just kind of gives lip service to the rule. It makes more sense to have it not exactly tied to the appraisal, but somewhere in the same neighborhood so that they can have a productive discussion and help the homeowner to avoid foreclosure. Maybe a short sale would have been appropriate had a second appraisal been provided.
They're not required to make any specific offer or accept any specific offer. And the rule, the terminology is about preparing an estimate of the short sale value that it may be willing to consider as part of the negotiation. Like, I don't even know what that means, frankly. I probably approved this rule. But anyway, in terms of that it, you know, an offer that it may be willing to consider, seems pretty loose. Like they don't, you know, they don't have to commit to the short sale offer or even accept the short sale offer. Do you disagree?
I don't disagree. That's an accurate characterization of the rule, Your Honor. However, the rule says shall. They do have to bring a short sale valuation or an estimate to mediation, and they have to disclose the conditions of the short sale. So Wells Fargo and the homeowner, they're not required to move forward with a short sale, but Wells Fargo, as part of good faith negotiations, does need to bring the short sale estimate.
In writing, because that's what the rule says, in writing versus oral.
Well, Your Honor, the rule doesn't specify, but we would ask this court to clarify Rule 13 to require a written...
Well, it's under documents to be produced under that rule.
Yes, Your Honor, and we agree, and the mediator does note that a short sale document, quote-unquote document, was not produced. And so it would really help clarify things for this homeowner and future homeowners who go through foreclosure mediation to know...
But the short sale proposal is not under the same heading as the... note the deed of trust, you know, the documents that must be produced. The information needs it, but it's not in the 10 days prior to the mediation. It's not in that section of that rule, right?
Yes, that's correct, Your Honor. There's no time requirement or even really manner requirement. It's just that it must be a short sale value must be provided.
Yeah, and that could be oral, theoretically. I mean, the rule is unclear, I think.
And that's why we asked the court to clarify the rule. But yes, you're right, Your Honor. Theoretically, it could be provided orally. But what Wells Fargo didn't do and why we contend it was in bad faith, other than having it be so wildly disparate from the last appraisal, was that there were no conditions provided. There was really nothing, as far as I know, that was discussed regarding the short sale. So it wasn't even a viable option for the appellant.
We might be on the same page here. We're going to use up all your time. I'm going to ask Justice Silver to give you some extra time. But did your client say that he wasn't interested in a short sale anyway?
Yes, Your Honor. According to Wells Fargo, he did say at the mediation he was not interested in a short sale. However, that doesn't relieve Wells Fargo of its duty under the rule to provide a short sale figure and what it was based on, for example, the conditions. So simply because the homeowner rejects it or Wells Fargo ultimately will reject a short sale. And the rule does say may, a short sale figure that it may be willing to accept. But as part of mediation, Wells Fargo did have to provide a short sale figure and the other requirements of the rules.
And they did provide the figure, 620.
They provided the figure, Your Honor, but we would contend that it wasn't in good faith given what we've discussed about how disparate it was from the 540 most recent appraisal that wasn't even disclosed to my client. Or to the mediator, as she notes in her statement. So I see I'm running out of time.
What I'm going to do is I'm going to give you 2 minutes since we cut into that. And she started asking right around that 1.5 minute mark.
Okay.
So we'll give you 2 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor. I appreciate the additional time.
So that'll be for rebuttal? What you meant?
Yeah.
May I briefly conclude?
No. Go ahead and have a seat, and then we're going to... I'll give you the 2 minute rebuttal.
Thank you for your time, Your Honor.
Thank you. All right, we'll hear from respondent, Ms. Dove.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. My name is Kelly Dove. I am here representing Wells Fargo. I'd like to start by pointing out that the parties have agreed in their briefing, and as is the case, that this is primarily a substantial evidence standard on appeal, where these are questions of fact that the district court's decision is entitled to substantial deference on as long as those findings are supported by some evidence. And here, the facts are to be taken in the light most favorable to the district court's findings and the prevailing party. And I would submit that that is not the picture that was just painted by Mr. Coppola's counsel, where all the facts that were presented were in the light most favorable to Mr. Coppola. And that's not what we're doing here today, and that's not the appropriate standard. For instance, regarding the second appraisal, on February 14th, Mr. Coppola stipulated that as in consideration of the fact that the mediation was being continued multiple times well beyond the 60 days, that Wells Fargo would not need to obtain a second appraisal or a BPO. And when he entered that stipulation,
He had the existing first appraisal in hand. So it's not like the first appraisal would have been a surprise to him after he agreed to that. Notwithstanding that, Mr. Coppola continued to complain that the first appraisal was exterior only and he really wanted an interior appraisal. So in an effort to appease Mr. Coppola and to remove one more issue of contention, Wells Fargo attempted to obtain an interior appraisal starting as early as January 2019 before he even entered that stipulation. However, Mr. Coppola did not make his home available for an interior inspection until within 9 days before the mediation. And so Wells Fargo elected not to use the second appraisal in any respect.
Excuse me.
Yes.
Ms. Dubb, wasn't he in the hospital, or was he in the hospital the entire time?
It's not clear from the record at all that he was in the hospital from the entire time. The initial continuance happened in November 2018, and there were several continuances, and I understand he had some health issues that merited those, but it is not my understanding that he was in the hospital the entire time such that he couldn't make the home available for an appraisal. But Wells Fargo had been through a previous mediation with Mr. Coppola where a very similar set of circumstances arose. Wells Fargo had a mediation set with Mr. Coppola. It was continued. The original BPO was stale by the date of the continued mediation. Wells Fargo obtained a second BPO but wasn't able to disclose it in time under the foreclosure mediation rules, and no certificate issued as a result. So having been down this road before, when Wells Fargo obtained a second appraisal but realized it would not be able to disclose it or use it within the confines of the rule, it determined that it would not use that appraisal. And that is a factual finding that the district court made after a close review of the record and the mediator's statement. The mediator's statement contains some inconsistencies, importantly. There's some confusion. The mediator says that Wells Fargo did use the appraisal with respect to a denial of a loan modification, which could not have been the case because that had been determined before that appraisal was even obtained. And then at the same time said they didn't use the appraisal for the short sale value, which was kind of mixed up. And so the district court looked at the documents, looked at the record, looked at the timeline and the representations, and made a factual determination that Wells Fargo, in fact, did not use that second appraisal at the mediation. And based on all that evidence, that determination is supported by substantial evidence and therefore should not be reversed on appeal. Again, facts in the light most favorable to the district court's findings. And as long as those support the district court's conclusions, this court should affirm those determinations. Likewise, the short sale value that was given at the mediation was $620,000, very close to the first appraisal, which was $615,000. Mr. Coppola's briefing concedes that the rule does not mandate that that amount be in writing. As I believe Justice Kadish might have pointed out, there is sort of a loose terminology to some of that requirement where it just says shall prepare a short sale value that the lender might consider accepting. And so Wells Fargo at that mediation made a short sale offer of $620. Mr. Coppola, consistent with his entire history through these many 13 years he has not been paying his mortgage, has never been interested in a resolution that would involve surrender of his property. He has always been clear, as is indicated in the Mora Declaration and elsewhere, that he is not interested in a short sale. So I agree with Ms. Altman that his lack of interest in a short sale does not by itself excuse any duties on the part of Wells Fargo, but it was surely the $620 short sale value, which A, everybody concedes and admits 100% meets the definition of a short sale under the law, under definitional law, and doesn't violate the rule, is also closely tied to that appraisal. Yes.
Ms. Dubb, does the rule require the short sale offer to be in writing in some form so that it can show the proposed offer and the proposed conditions that would be, that would have to be accepted for that offer to go through?
We say no, that the rule does not require that. And if the court would like to interpret that way, we would simply urge that that be a going forward rule, because to date there's no authority that says that the rule should be interpreted that way. And unlike some of the other parts of that rule that talk about producing the documents, for instance, in the clause before talking about the BPO or appraisal, it talks about producing. This just says prepare, and prepare a value that the lender might be willing to consider. And so that terminology is different. It's less strict. And so we would submit that it does not require that. And that was also, whether it's conceded or interpreted, in Mr. Coppola's briefing, they agreed. So if a new rule is to be announced in that regard, we would simply request that it be a going forward rule, not applied to the mediation in this case. But regarding this, so the second appraisal wasn't used. In the opening brief, Mr. Coppola argues that because it was used, that second appraisal had to be disclosed. But again, taking the facts in the light most favorable to the district court's findings and Wells Fargo, the second appraisal was in fact not used during that mediation. It seems that, of course, Mr. Coppola was aware that there was a second appraisal because it was an interior appraisal that required access to his house. And so in some respects, it was brought up and discussed, but it was not used in any calculation for the short sale or for the denial of the loan modification. But in the reply brief, Mr. Coppola changes his position slightly and says that appraisal was required to be disclosed regardless of whether it was used or not. We haven't found any law in support of that, especially in light of the waiver that exists here, where he explicitly waived his right to enforce that 60-day BPO or to contest that first appraisal. So the parties all knew they were going into this using that first appraisal, and Wells Fargo explicitly disclaimed using that second appraisal given the timing difficulties.
Can you walk me through your analysis of why, of the requirements in the rule respecting short sale? Because the rules are really pretty confusing to me as written, my signature is among the others that adopted them, so that's on all of us. But trying to impose a writing requirement on the short sale proposal when the proposal mandate itself is permissive, not mandatory, is confusing to me, particularly given the specificity and the time deadlines for things like the note and the deed of trust, which clearly are written and mandatorily subject to production at a set time. Let me know if you don't follow that question. I'd like you to just walk me through it.
I followed the question. I think it's for those reasons, in part, we do not think there's a writing requirement. On top of that, there's also a contingent component, really, to the short sale value requirement, which is that it contemplates that a short sale, that a lender be prepared to discuss a short sale and a short sale value if a loan modification is not agreed to. So it is so the parties can come together, discuss the possibilities of a loan modification or other foreclosure avoidance alternatives. And then if a loan modification can't be reached or isn't qualified for, the lender is supposed to be prepared to offer a possible short sale value that, again, it would consider accepting. And so I think that contingent piece where it's sort of an only if a loan modification can't be reached sort of underscores that permissive, less formal nature of the short sale value as opposed to some of the other requirements. And I think the BPO and appraisal.
Could a lender go to one of these mediations having negotiated for loan modification? Those negotiations failed even before they got there, but they get there and they say, you know, in view of all this, we don't have a short sale proposal. Would that violate the rule?
I think there could be a situation where there is no viable short sale proposal, and that might be the kind of situation where it just isn't practicable to develop one, but the rule does say that the lender should be prepared to discuss something it might be willing to accept. I mean, one could envision circumstances where it would be just very difficult to come up with any short sale offer that that would be realistic at all. I mean, here there was a 620 short sale offer for an linked to an appraisal of 615 where Mr. Coppola owed $720,000+, not including interest in other payments. So here, you know, the 620, even though it was above, slightly above that appraised value, was still at least, practically speaking, a $200,000 haircut over what he was, would have been obligated to pay for his full debt under the note. So I have a hard, I don't want to say that.
And there's a competing numbers. There's one that says 645 is what he owed on the note, and the other is in the 700s.
So there's a few different numbers floating around. One is Mr. Coppola, in I believe his reply brief, asserts that 620 was the payoff, and that's not so. Wells Fargo provided a partial payoff as part of its documentation. 649 was the unpaid principal balance, and then Wells Fargo, at the time of that this occurred, had advanced about $71,000 in escrow, such as property taxes and homeowners insurance, to protect its interest in the property. That totals 720. What that payoff did not also include was the other accruing interest during the extended time when Mr. Coppola hadn't been paying. So in reality, he, conservatively speaking, owed probably over 820. And so that's where those figures are coming from. So the appraisal at the time was 615, short sale was 620, and 720 was just the bare bones minimum he owed. And as the court appreciates, the amount
that... If there is defining... I'm sorry to talk over you. If there is a requirement in the rule that the lender be prepared to offer some short sale value, if you put Shaw in there, and if you assume that in this case the amount owed on the secured by the deed of trust, the debtor's obligation, let's call it 720 just to have a number. 719 would be a short sale technically under Shaw, right?
That is technically a short sale.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, you know,
of course, you acknowledge that even besides all the individual documentation and requirements and timing, there's an overarching duty of good faith in the context of the foreclosure mediation program. So, even if an offer would satisfy some specific requirements of the rules, they need to also like show up in good faith, make an effort to resolve the dispute. Is that your understanding?
Yes, it is a good faith requirement, and the court closely hews the good faith requirement to the compliance with the rules as well. Of course, the good faith compliant requirement is there partly to fill in any gaps. For example, maybe the example Justice Pickering just offered, where maybe you comply sort of as a good faith and fair dealing kind of concept, where maybe you comply with the rules to the letter, but you show up and you, you know, engage in some shenanigans that show that you're not really there in good faith. We would submit, especially based on the standard of review, that there is nothing that Wells Fargo has done here in bad faith. If you look at the history here, which is lengthy with Mr. Coppola, and who has been in his property without paying now since 2009, which I just realized is longer than my seventh grader has been around. This is a long time of non-payment, and Mr. Coppola has, you know, really been able to reap the benefits of this program. And in just trying to accommodate Mr. Coppola's desire to get a second appraisal, that should not, you mentioned no good deed goes unpunished, and that should not mean that Wells Fargo can't proceed here, where it attended mediation, it had a short sale value, it had an appraisal accompanied with a waiver that Mr. Coppola wouldn't challenge using the first appraisal.
I think his point is that the second appraisal showed a real drop from the first appraisal, and that the second appraisal, the information, I mean, you argue that technically the second appraisal wasn't available till the day before the hearing, and by then the loan modification had failed. But if the facts were slightly different and the second appraisals drop infected your client's willingness to engage in the loan modification, yet it wasn't disclosed. I mean, that could be the stuff of bad faith, wouldn't you agree? I acknowledge it wasn't found by the district court, but further to Justice Kadish's point that there is a good faith obligation in these rules and in that setting.
I just think there's none of those facts here where those decisions were made before they got the first appraisal. So and by the way, just in the overarching scheme of things here, there's really no significant factual dispute that Mr. Coppola has never provided the documents that are required to properly evaluate him for a loan modification or otherwise a short sale that would have been outside of the auspices of this program. May I briefly conclude? If you've heard all you need to hear, that's fine. But Mr. Coppola has not himself provided any of those documents. And all the facts here show that Wells Fargo did not let that subsequent appraisal infect the proceedings. On a property that's now worth, if you believe Zillow, in excess of $1.1 million. So thank you for your time, Your Honors. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much, counsel. All right, we'll hear back from the appellant for 2 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honors, for giving me this time for rebuttal. So just to talk a little bit about what Ms. Dove said in her argument, this isn't about how long the alleged default has been taking place or how many times the foreclosure mediation has occurred in the past. This is about Wells Fargo participating in bad faith in a mediation. It's about following the rules. It's about adhering to the spirit of the foreclosure mediation program, which is to get homeowners and beneficiaries together to have meaningful negotiations. And so to address Ms. Dove's point, my client was in the hospital for 3 months. He was available to do an interior appraisal as early as November of 2018. The emails with Mr. Mora from the trustee show this. He said, I'm happy to accommodate an interior appraisal. That was November 2nd of 2018. The emails strongly show that the second appraisal was tied to his appeal of the former denial of the loan modification. So Wells Fargo did get the second appraisal. They used it, as indicated in the mediator's statement, and they relied on it to deny my client for a loan modification or the appeal of the denial of the loan modification, and then they didn't give it to the homeowner or to the mediator. They didn't disclose it until after the mediation, which by then, unfortunately, it was useless. Ms. Dove also raises the point that there were some factual findings by the district court. The mediator's statement had inconsistencies. Well, that may have been true, but according to the Cohen case, decided by the Nevada Court of Appeals in September of 2015, it was an abuse of the court's discretion not to hold an evidentiary hearing. And so the district court could have done that if it found factual discrepancies with the mediator's statement or anything else in the record. I'd also like to talk about the short sale value very briefly. Ms. Dove acknowledged that 719 would have been a short sale value, which that just gives lip service to the rule. There should be a good faith requirement. And in conclusion, Your Honors, we would ask that you find that the district court abused its discretion and grant sanctions.